Well, commodities have been on the move. The widely watched CRB Commodity Index is up double digits this year, outperforming many other sectors of the market. And along with that, inflation is now sticking around the 3.5% to 4% range, and inflation appears to be ticking back upwards. Commodities are not helping with that. And one could safely say that gold and precious metals have been sniffing this out all year with a big move that we've seen to new record highs, at least in gold. Joining us on the show to discuss this and much more in terms of what's driving precious metals currently is Greg Orrell. He's at the OCM Gold Fund. Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Wonderful to be back on the show.
Greg, let's just start off high level. What is your take on some of the drivers behind the big move that we've seen in precious metals so far this year?
Well, first off, we've seen a very strong Asian demand, especially coming out of China. And for a long time, the Shanghai gold price has been over $100 plus higher than, you know, what has been quoted in New York and London. Finally, it appears that, you know, the Chinese price has really wrestled the market away from the West. And so we've been arbitraging towards that Chinese number now for a while, and you know, the Western markets, they haven't been able to figure out what's going on. I mean, all the articles recently, I mean, Bloomberg came out with one, and Financial Times had one a couple of weeks ago, you know, with, you know, asking analysts, why is the gold price going up? It shouldn't be going up. You know, real rates are higher, and you know, all these other factors are taking place. There's, you know, dollar strong. You know, why is the gold price moving higher? And it really is a lot of that. You know, they can't figure out that Chinese central bank's been buying for 8-9 months in a row. You know, you've seen tremendous buying by the Chinese public has been buying. So that is kind of a very provincial thinking to believe that, you know, only the West drives the gold price. And, you know, granted, that's been the case for a long time because, well, the dollar's been, you know, the world's reserve currency, and, you know, maybe the gold price is trying to tell us something.
Yeah. When you talk about strong Asian demand, especially China, both on the retail and on the central bank side, as you noted, we do see China, other central banks buying record amounts of gold. Retail investors are selling, if you look at the fund flows. We've characterized this as, you know, the smart money moves in first, and then the institutional money moves in second, and then the retail crowd is usually last to that move. We think that we're past the smart money and now in the institutional phase of accumulating gold. The retail crowd will likely come in at the later stages of that move, which we don't think we're near the end of yet. But what do you think accounts for the strong Asian demand, as you noted, in China?
Well, and this is what, you know, where a lot of people, they kind of miss the what is happening is that, you know, the Chinese market's been, you know, the stock market's gone down, property market's been under pressure, and, you know, that drives a different sentiment and psychology for people to, and investors to gravitate towards real assets, and gold is the preeminent currency. And so what you're looking at is, and, you know, Chinese investors, you know, looking for that safety and that safe haven buying. You know, what has taken place in the West has been, you've had, you know, strong NASDAQ equity markets, the whole AI hype that has captured the imagination of investors, you know, with, and along with higher rates on treasuries, you know, you've had a diversion of capital flows away from gold assets and into those other sectors. So, you know, that's why, you know, we've seen the selling of gold ETFs in the West, where, you know, you've had 9 months in a row of selling of gold ETF flows in the US and, you know, Western markets. And so that has been a big factor in, you know, supplying the market. And maybe we've reached the end of that supply, and that's what's really starting to drive this gold price now, because, you know, the demand from central banks and Asian investor demand seems insatiable at this point.
And, we have seen a strong move already. I would say, we're short-term overbought. It would be natural to see some level of consolidation or pullback from these levels, just speaking technically. So, I would be, if I were looking at gaining exposure, I would just be looking for at least some settling out after this large move that we've seen at a breakout to new record highs. But over the long term, I think you and I would agree that it does appear as if this trend is going to stay intact for some time. And part of that has to do with something that you recently wrote about as well. And that's with US debt levels and the very quick rise that we've seen in debt servicing costs, which have now exceeded $1 trillion. That was as of late last year. So as US debt levels have climbed to new record highs, with $6 trillion in spending last year, over $6 trillion expected to be spent this year. And a huge part of that, of course, is entitlement spending areas that cannot be touched. So structurally, the US is set up for ongoing deficit spending. And with that, central banks, including China, are looking at this problem and they're thinking, hey, we have a large amount of US Treasury reserves. We have a large amount of US dollar-based assets. Why don't we diversify some of those just a little bit? Because this is probably not going to be in our benefit as the US fiscal position continues to erode.
Yeah, I mean that's hitting the point, Chris, is that the market is looking at, I mean, there's some investors and certainly central banks, larger holders of gold are looking at that. I mean, central bank purchases of gold clearly picked up after the freezing of the Russian sovereign assets and got a number of central banks thinking, okay, well, if they're going to do that to the Russians, I mean, how good is a neutral asset is the dollar? Well, it's not neutral at all. And so, that's certainly helped spur, central bank demand for that diversification, along with what you were just talking about, looking at the structural problems of the US and that, the Fed would have to come in and start monetizing and really supporting, the fiscal situation of the US if it wanted to maintain interest rates at a level that wouldn't implode the economy. That is, I think, one of the factors that's looming out there in the gold market is why is the gold market moving? I mean, it seems like we have more questions than answers. I think as technicians would probably say is, you're going to get the price move and then you'll get the narrative and the reasons later. And I'm sure that's part of, what we're going to find out, and whether it is geopolitical events that are going to be driving the gold market, and maybe that's part of it. Is it going to be accelerated debasement based on the fiscal situation of the U.S., stubborn inflation that the Fed has to actually acquiesce to? And if the Fed is then shown as being neutered, and that credibility as an institution comes into question, that's certainly going to drive capital flows towards gold. And then ask the question, well, how much is it going to drive, capital flows towards digital assets? I think, those are more tied towards technology and really disruption. That's a whole nother tangent.
Yeah, and obviously, Bitcoin, the crypto space, was definitely eclipsing gold and precious metals for quite some time, given that parabolic rise that we have seen. And not everyone around the world, particularly in areas like China or where there are regulations against either mining or holding crypto or the use of crypto, have that option. And so, if you're in China, gold and silver are still the most reliable and long-standing forms of money. In that mindset versus, like you're saying, in the West, there's been a bit of a change in towards accepting crypto. I have an exposure to crypto, to Bitcoin. I have an exposure to precious metals. I think, you want to hedge your risks in various ways, whether or not that is with digital assets or with precious metals. And I want to bring up something. This is a topic again that I think speaks to the heart of why precious metals and inflationary hedges in general still have a bright future ahead. And that has to do with the topic that's been discussed, probably gained much more momentum post 2020 after the mother of all stimulus bombs, was dropped during the COVID crash, the implementation of modern monetary theory as we see it. But that goes to something called fiscal dominance. And I just want to read a little excerpt from a paper that was published at the St. Louis Federal Reserve on this topic. And this author says that fiscal dominance refers to the possibility that the accumulation of government debt and continuing deficits can produce increases in inflation that dominate, that's where the dominance part comes from, central bank intentions to keep inflation low. And this paper goes on to talk about, historically speaking, when you've gotten to a point where the US is today, governments have resorted to so-called inflation taxation or money printing in order to try to erode the value of outstanding debts. I think that's the thing that central banks, global governments around the world, looking at the US dollar as the global reserve asset, are saying, fiscal dominance, this battle that's likely looming where inflation is going to have to become part of a longer-term policy for the US. And that's just what they're doing. The central banks are getting ahead of that. They're diversifying their reserves. And like you said, Asian demand is growing very quickly. They want to diversify. They want to hedge these risks just like you and I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're at this point in time is that, is the Fed going to have to acquiesce on raising its 2% inflation target? Is that what the gold market's trying to get ahead of? Maybe it is. Like I said, maybe it's something else. There is so much debt out there, and rising interest rates clearly put all that debt into negative mark-to-markets. We saw the banking crisis over a year ago hit because of mark-to-market issues. The Fed came out the other day and says, we've got almost $1 trillion of mark-to-market losses on our books that we're going to let run out, but we're not going to realize them. But if they were to mark their book to market, would they be solvent? So, I mean, these are all things that the market is now starting to focus on a little bit more. I mean, you've got some big macro thinkers, Dan Druckenmiller and Ray Dalio, these guys that have been out there that are starting to talk about what the issues are. Some people are listening. The Main Street of the market clearly wants to continue down the path that, okay, everything's okay. I mean, you have to, if you're in the on Wall Street, you have to believe that the Fed can handle this. And that's why it's a game of confidence. And as long as they can maintain that confidence, then you have the belief that inflation is going to be maintained at a reasonable level, and that supports bond market pricing. It supports equity values, because in terms of using what discount rate are you going to use for valuing stocks if inflation is running wild and interest rates are moving up. So I mean, these are there's a lot of reasons why you have to have confidence in the Fed. You start, people are wondering, are we, setting the stage with 130% debt to GDP numbers, out there looming? Is that the beginning of, banana republic type of moves? I mean, historically, that's led to some type of credit crisis in the past for any country with, those type of numbers. I mean, so far, they've been able to withstand, any type of run, with debt levels reaching what historically were unsustainable. But that doesn't mean there's a light switch that gets flicked at some point.
And I don't know about you, but my case for having exposure to precious metals, particularly gold, is not necessarily in preparation for some type of gloom and doom or worst case scenario. It's more of just it's a rational approach given the forces that we see and some of the things that we've discussed. Sometimes you'll hear the case made that worst case scenario, you need to have gold and silver so that you can use it as money, to exchange of goods. That would definitely be worst case scenario. I mean, from my standpoint, this is just a logical and rational approach towards your investment portfolio and preparing for the years ahead, where we are likely to see higher than average inflation, continued diversification out of treasuries, dollar-based assets by China and BRICS countries, which they're moving full ahead in doing. And also in terms of just ongoing geopolitical troubles, which are likely to increase when you think about the deterioration of relations between US and China, I don't think that that's going to fix. So there's a number of structural long-term forces here that seem to be providing a tailwind for precious metals. And alongside of that, I mean, if you just look at gold relative to nearly every world currency right now, I mean, it is appreciating across the board. We posted a table of this recently on X, just showing if you look at gold, it's green relative to every currency out there, which means on the flip side that nearly every currency in the, around the globe is also depreciating. We don't think that that is a trend that is going to stop anytime soon. So, you know, with that said, given some of the things that we discussed, how would you tell someone that's either thinking about investing in precious metals if they don't have exposure? What would you say is just a reasonable kind of way to approach the gold market in your investment portfolio?
I mean, gold has volatility, and the gold miners have had even more volatility. The gold miners, on a relative basis, are cheap, and as when you look at it historically, to gold to the XAU, which is the gold miners index. To give you an example, the gold miners index, if you just were to take the XAU and gold, and use that as a ratio. I mean, that ratio was about 20 to 25% higher when gold was trading at $2,043 about a year ago. And here we are about $300 higher, and that ratio hasn't come back to those levels. And that goes to speak to, you just haven't had the capital flows into the sector in the Western markets because the investors, haven't felt the same need that they have had in China, where the stock market has gone down and the the property market has gone down. And so, for investors, when you're looking at, when the gold bull market really starts and the big major trend changes, you start to look at, major ratios, and that would be, gold and the Standard and Poor's, S&P 500, that's a good ratio to look at, which is getting ready to break a major long-term trend. For the gold and gold shares, you'd be looking at XAU gold ratios, and those are looking like they're ready to break major trends. And so, I see that, major trends are getting ready to be broken here. And those, if I look back on think of what happened in 2001, when you broke those trends, I mean those ratios on the trends, you had a major 10-year move. The S&P was basically flat, didn't deliver anything over that 10-year period, whereas the gold shares, for example, if you were in our fund from that 10-year period, and this isn't to say that you're going to get that same performance again, you did a basically a 10 timer. And so it does show that, when you hit the cycles right, in the gold shares, they do very well. Gold itself, in terms of bullion, it's been, you've had some volatility, but, holding it over the long term has proven to be, a very competitive investment to the S&P and to bonds. So, that's tells you that it's a good diversifier to have in a portfolio. And I would stress that, gold assets are, really a hedge against policy failure. And that can be fiscal policy, monetary policy, and foreign policy. And so, just having some type of hedge in your portfolio, whether, you're looking at, geez, I want to have a 5% allocation or a 10% allocation. I mean, there's different allocations that have shown, where you have outperformance in your portfolio, that number is a bit higher than 10%. So I'm a strong believer that, there's a place for gold assets in everyone's portfolio. Like I said, I bring up the digital assets because some people believe that that is the wave of the future. And as you pointed out, Chris, people around the world, not everybody has a computer. Not everybody has access to something that they believe can be money that needs a third party. I mean, one of the things that gold doesn't need is it doesn't need a computer, it doesn't need electricity to be that asset.
Yeah. And if you're in China, I mean, China's banned all transactions of cryptocurrencies. And so, you'd have to be involved in the illegal market there in order to hold or mine Bitcoin. So, yeah, again, one of the most populous countries in the planet, second now overtaken by India, of course. But again, they still see gold, silver as the true store of value and money. So they are also, they're hedging their risks as well, Chinese citizens, by owning gold. China has not banned owning gold yet, so that's still a pretty big tailwind. And India as well is growing by leaps and bounds. We should say there's not just a risk side of this when it comes to precious metals, but there's also the profit side in terms of the wealth that's being generated in a country like India, which is growing by leaps and bounds currently with some of the recent GDP numbers. And they're accumulating also. So, this is a theme that touches upon the emerging markets and the developing world as well, which continues to grow. So lots of drivers here. And I think, as you said, and I would agree, these are structural long-term investment themes that investors can position around. So not necessarily a short-term trade here, but this is a long-term investment theme that we're talking about when it comes to investing in precious metals. So as we close, Greg, tell our listeners a little bit more, if you would, about the OCM Gold Fund and best way to follow more of your work or get in touch with you.
Well, the OCM Gold Fund is, it's a mutual fund that, I've been running since '96. It has a strong history of performance, multiple Lipper Awards in terms of performance over 5 and 10 years. We've, had the best record for 5 years, for 5 consecutive years at 10 for the 10 years. We've had 3 and 5 year Lipper Awards for over the last 5 years. So we've had strong performance, and it's really based on a belief that the gold in the ground has value and is underappreciated, and that the miners, when you have a they offer leverage to a rising gold market, and when the gold market is goes into a bull phase and you get the capital flows when the broader market is not performing, and that's when the capital flows come. That's when a fund like ours has historically done well, and miners will start to gain some appreciation again. And I believe that the miners are in the best position that they've been in terms of their balance sheets, capital discipline, than they have probably in my 40-year career. So that is a an endorsement, in my opinion, for when capital does start to come into this sector, that the miners will perform. And but that hasn't been the case. They're playing a little bit of catch up over the last month. We've seen a rise, but we still have a long ways to go, in my opinion, for when money starts to move into the sector. Just to give you an example, NVIDIA was moving in, one day, the market capitalization of NVIDIA was moving, the same amount as, the entire market capitalization of the precious metals equity sector. So if anyone wants to get in touch with us, OCMGoldFund.com, all the information's there. And you can follow us there. We're on all the major platforms at Fidelity, Schwab, et cetera.
Well, Greg, as always, pleasure to have you on the show again to get an update on your view and the number of things that we're talking about again when it comes to geopolitical risks, diversification out of dollar-based assets, de-dollarization as it's often referred to, and the ongoing structural problems that we see with climbing U.S. debt and debt servicing costs. I think you would agree that a lot of this is shaping up for a higher than average inflationary period for the years ahead, which has been our view, and the data continues to align with that. So this is shaping up for a long-term tailwind, we believe, for precious metals. And of course, speak with your advisor about any things that we discussed today before making any big moves. Assess your risk appropriately. But if you want to follow more of Greg's work, you can go to OCM goldfund.com. Greg, look forward to speaking with you in the future.
All right, great. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
So as Greg mentioned in today's interview, the gold stock space is a bit volatile, so you need to assess your risk properly. If you do not have an exposure and would like to gain exposure to precious metals as a long-term investment, of course, again, this is not a short-term trade, this is a long-term investment, then keep in mind we are short-term overbought, technically speaking, when you think about the large move that we've seen in both gold and silver over the past month or so, breaking out to new highs on gold. So you probably want to be looking for some level of pullbacks. I did mention the paper that was posted on the St. Louis Federal Reserve website about fiscal dominance and some of the immediate concerns that are expressed there when it comes to U.S. debt and rising debt interest costs having crossed $1 trillion. That is consuming an ever larger portion of the U.S.'s budget. This is not a good thing. And again, you know, this is not about necessarily doom and gloom or the collapse of the US or the collapse of the dollar. This is really just about looking at the realities of the situation that exists today and making the appropriate moves to invest and hedge around a longer-term, higher-than-average inflationary period due to, again, this issue of fiscal dominance. If you'd like to read that paper, I will have a link out to it where this interview is located on Financial Sense. If you have any questions on what we discussed today, or if you'd like to get in touch with us at Financial Sense Wealth Management about what we're doing in client portfolios when it comes to precious metals, commodities, energy, and preparing for higher than average inflation. This is something that we've been discussing since 2020, given the mother of all stimulus bombs and the implementation of modern monetary theory at that time and the continued massive amounts of spending that we have seen since. We do believe that we are looking again at higher than average inflationary period for the years ahead, and we are positioning our clients around this for the long term. If you would like to get in touch with us to know how you can also get on board, our number is 888-486-3939. For FS Insider, I'm Chris Sheridan. Thanks for listening.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.